Good afternoon. Thanks for hanging with us. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall here in Studio A, and today it's midday with the mayor. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott joins me on Zoom from City Hall. Happy New Year, Mr. Mayor, and welcome back.
Happy New Year, Tom. Thank you. Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
And congratulations. You were named the Baltimore Afro Person of the Year. That's a terrific honor, and we congratulate you. Of course, a lot of the reason for that is the incredible success that you and your partners have had in reducing violence. I do want to talk about that in a minute, but I want to start, instead of looking back at those nice numbers that we can, as I said, chat about in a minute, I want to look forward to the General Assembly. You've announced your legislative priorities, and some of them have to do with public safety. Let's talk about those. One of them is to grant investigatory and subpoena powers to the Administrative Charging Committee. That's something that has to be done at the state level. What's that about? How will that work?
Yeah, I think that, Tom, folks just have to be reminded that here in Baltimore, we have been really the standard bearer for civilian oversight, and to remind them that we had a civilian review board before anybody else had those. These subpoena powers were previously held by our civilian review board, but when the state decided to make those changes with the AAC and having that be the body for every jurisdiction in the state, we need to now empower that committee, that group, with those powers that were once with our civilian review board that we used to have here in the city. It's a simple fix to continue longstanding, and as we know, will always be needed, independent civilian oversight.
You also want to talk to the legislators in Annapolis about setting the amounts of fines and penalties for ordinance enforcement. What animated that request?
Well, listen, I think it's very important to note that when you're talking about all the major surrounding counties and major counties in Maryland, their fine limits are already at 5,000. Ours are set and eliminated by the state law at 1,000. When you think about folks that are illegally dumping and doing all of these things in our community, I don't think any resident in the city of Baltimore would blink an eye if they think that the mayor is trying to raise the ability for us to fine those people from $1,000 to up to $5,000. And again, Tom, it's important for folks to know that maximum fine of $5,000 is already an option for many counties across the state of Maryland.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would think that that's a very reasonable request.
Absolutely.
I want to ask you about Motor Vehicle Administration records. You're asking for access to those. That surprised me. I didn't realize that, for example, the police department here in Baltimore doesn't have access to that kind of information.
No, they do. They do. But this is again about illegal dumping. They do. So this legislation is sort of like clarifying for the purpose of that section that the Special Investigations Unit of the Department of Housing and Community Development that does that code enforcement work on people that are legally dumping, they would need to be deemed in this law as a criminal justice agency so that they can receive photo images for licenses, et cetera, from the people, the information legally dumping. They can see tag numbers and all of these things, but they do not have the ability to look at those photos so that we can hold these folks accountable and helping identify these people for illegal dumping cases. I don't think, again, that any resident of the city of Baltimore would say that the people that are investigating and have the ability to give out fines and all of those things for illegal dumping shouldn't be able to see someone's license or ID photo.
You also want to extend access to juvenile records to groups like MONSEE, the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement, the Mayor's Office of African American Men. What access do they not currently have that you think they need to do their jobs better?
So I think this is a very important thing for me to note. This is about reinstating access provided to MONSEE. For decades, right, MONSEE and his predecessor, MOCJ, had access to this information from our state partners around young people and families. And for me, this comes out of our one, that access for MONSEE sunsetting, but more importantly, from our youth violence stat, where we, our partners at DGS and other parts of the state, the school system, Monsey, MOAIM, all of us are talking about, school police are talking and working together in ways that we, quite frankly, never had before around young people in schools and being able to, we had to, you remember a few years ago, we talked about the Youth Data Hub legislation and having to be able to get legislation passed to share data between organizations working around youth. This is about that. This is essential for Monsey, as well as additional youth-focused services, ensuring that we can do treatment plans and referrals that are comprehensive and effective in reducing recidivism. Because if MOAIM, for example, think about our work with Squeegee. MOAIM is the group that is doing just that. If they are not able to have that kind of access, and they are the ones that are actually physically going out there and talking to these young people, learning about them, and then trying to connect them and their families to other things, MOCFS is the agency that connects families to all of those things, whether it be rental assistance,
it's children and family services, right?
Success, yeah, water bill assistance program. But they cannot do that if they do not have the access for them. They are the extension. For Monsey, this is just a continuing the access that they have had for many years, and obviously it had a lapse. And we're looking forward to seeing that go through as well.
You're also once again asking for a bigger share for the city from various taxes. One has to do with the highway user revenue that for your transportation program, the other in housing. You've asked for, you know, a bigger local share of the existing sales tax. You tried that last year. It didn't go anywhere. What's your take on your chances for this year?
Well, I'll start with HUR. I think that, you know, this has been a big, big, big issue for not just me, but for my county executive counterparts for many years. We successively were able to go and get HUR bumped up a few years ago. You know better than anyone, Tom, that.
And again, remind people HUR is.
Oh, yeah. HUR is the highway user revenue. It's mm-hmm. how roads and bridges and all those things are actually maintained and taken care of in the state of Maryland. The money goes in, it gets disseminated down from the state to the city and the counties. We get a larger share because, unlike our friends in the counties, we have to maintain all of our own road and bridge infrastructure. The state does not do any of that for us. Now, history, as you know, Tom, during the Great Recession, because they had to, the previous administration cut HUR. For us in the city, that meant that we lost from that time in 08 to 2022, 2023, $900 million. Myself, the county executives, MACO, all of us were able to go and get that bumped up. We are now, we want to maintain our share of highway user revenue. We do not want that to go away, but I won't be alone because we'll be advocating alongside my county executive counterparts, and we're going to continue that. Now, to the point about the sales tax, something you and I have talked about for years now, it's about understanding that every other major city in the country keeps some of its local sales tax. And we know that was created when states in the country really was pushing people to suburbs to make sure that city budgets didn't over rely on property tax burden, which is one of the main reasons why ours is so high. We understand, Tom, that the state is in a different fiscal situation. We have to keep asking so that it remains on the top of everyone's mind, and we'll work through that as we go forward.
It's Midday with the Mayor. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott is my guest. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Yes, Mr. Mayor, continue, please.
I was just going to add that just so folks know that 1% of the sales tax generated here in Maryland, that as of right now we don't get any of, would allow me to give every homeowner in the city $1,000 off their property taxes, which is exactly what we will do when we get this, because this is something that we're going to keep fighting for until we get it.
Yeah, that could be a tough ask this year, given the fact that
we understand. Yeah, I'm, you know me, I'm a reasonable guy.
Yep. But, you know, we'll just see how, you know, lots of stuff happens over a period of 90 days. You never know. When it comes to revenue, you've proposed to raise the ride share tax and for, you know, Uber and Lyft and taxi cabs and stuff. At one point, there was a consideration of making it 50 cents per ride. Now it's 38 cents. The chairwoman of the Budget and Appropriations Committee, Danielle McCray, who represents your former district, was concerned because it's really difficult to know how much money that might generate in fees because Uber and Lyft, for some reason, are not required or obliged to disclose the data about how many rides they offer in the city from year to year. So, first of all, do you think that that will pass and that that will be implemented? And what's your guess? And it seems like it might be kind of a guess as to the kind of revenue it might create.
Yeah, I think that we know, first and foremost, I want to just say a few things. You know, the councilwoman I know very well, as you know, she represents the district very well and is a fine budget chair. But I also just want to note that this fee, Tom, hasn't been updated since 2014. Let's just say you and I are riding down to CFG Bank Arena next month with CIAA. If it's a $20 ride, this will raise costs by less than 1%. But most importantly for your listeners, all of the money will go to transportation costs like repairing roads and filling potholes. That's really important because we're the, as I said earlier, we're the only jurisdiction in the state responsible for maintaining our own roads. But I'll just say to the point of what you talk about the money, for fiscal 25, this tax generated $3.8 million. And when those fees are added, they are typically how it typically works. It doesn't reduce ridership, right? Even and when you think about this minor increase, it still will be less than what people pay in like DC, Chicago, and you know, New York has congestion and all of those other things. But we know that it generates money that goes right back into what is needed in the city, and that's improving roads and infrastructure. But again, it hasn't been raised since 2014. I turned 30 that year. I had zero kids and was a mere city councilman. I'm now almost 42 with three kids. That's how much time has changed since we've updated that fee. And we know that if when you put these things off for long periods of time, it impacts the city in the long run in a much more detrimental way.
You're certainly right that a lot of things have changed since you were 30 years old, and we'll see, you know, how folks react to that. But I do want to talk about crime reduction. The numbers are incredibly good. And back in 2019, our city recorded 352 homicides, and last year there were 133. It's just, you know, dramatically lower. The clearance rate by the police when they're investigating crimes now is higher than the national average. It's nearly 70% when they are, or 65%, I guess, in 2025 when they're investigating homicides. So that's all really very, very positive. You are going to be augmenting or coming up with a new 5-year plan. You're going to roll that out, you hope, in the spring. What's your aspiration for that? You're going to do some community meetings and have people give some input, but what's your initial take on what can be done differently? What can be expanded? How's it going to change in this next 5-year plan from the last one?
Yeah, I think that. Listen, Tom, you know, and I guess you were one of the folks who understood from a media perspective why we needed to have a 5-year plan. So I always appreciated that you and I, when I first unveiled that the first CVIP, the Comprehensive Violence Prevention Plan, that we could actually have conversations in depth about why this needed to be not just an immediate thing, but a long-term thing. It's now kind of funny for us to be on the backside of that 5 years.
Yeah, looking at another 5 years, right?
Yeah, looking at another 5 years, right? You remember the conversations that folks were saying like, oh, we don't have 5 years. We need to do a plan that's just this year focus only. But you have to really plan these things out because what we're talking about is long-standing change, not just from a government operation standpoint, not just now from a community organization operation standpoint, but from a culture and a community at its core standpoint. So obviously, we're going to be talking about, for example, fully having GVRS expanded into all 9 police districts. We're in 5. We have 4 to go. Growing our CVI work even further is going to be a part of that. Looking at all of the parts of what we're doing, how can we be better? Even at the stuff that we've improved dramatically in, we can be better in all of those. But also the important part about that, and I know you've seen it, so you saw how it was done the first time, because you watched The Body Politic with Erica Bridgeford and those folks leading those community conversations and feedback sessions, that there will be things that will come directly up in from the community. And I think that
Yeah,
that's
and Erica does, conflict resolution.
the
Certainly,
conflict
that's
resolution.
a big part of,
That's a big step. And to me, that is one of the most important reasons why we've been so successful. It wasn't the typical thing where the city just came up with a plan. Yes, there are things that only I and the people that work for me can do, right? Because only experts in policing or violence prevention from the CVI, we have to develop those things. But there are partnerships and portions that only the community, we need to hear directly from them. And we're going to be rolling that out and setting goals again to what how we're going to accomplish over the next 5 years.
When it comes to tweaking the plan, when it comes to, adding to it and expanding it, how much will you be able to take into consideration some of the complaints you've gotten? About 6 weeks ago, State's Attorney Ivan Bates, surprised a lot of people and sent you a letter that was very, very critical of Monsey, for example. And I know that you two have met and you've talked and you're trying to make sure that you're on the same page. But he has said that he wasn't going to. His office was no longer going to, directly deal with Monsey. How do you respond to his, specific complaints about Monsey, which is again the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement? It oversees programs like Safe Streets. How do you respond to his assertion that Monsey's not transparent enough and that some of the things that they do actually impede his prosecutors' ability to prosecute cases?
So a couple of things here. One, I will state that you're right. Monsey oversees Safe Streets. Even though Safe Streets works for private entities and not for the city of Baltimore, Monsey also oversees GVRS, right? We
Again,
know
that's the
that
group violence reduction strategy.
the group violence reduction strategy. That is something that Monsey oversees, right? But this is what I have to remind everyone. That is at my direction. And when you think about GVRS, for example, that work is going to continue, Tom, because only one person can dictate to the police department what cases they investigate, and that's me. But we're also blessed in that case to also have the highest lawyer in the land of Maryland, the Attorney General Anthony Brown, and his team continuing to be a full-bred partner in GVRS. I disagree with the claims that the state's attorney has made when it comes to that effectiveness and that of Monsey. But we want to move past all of that. We want to get past the conflation of things and what I think sometimes is data that gets misrepresented. That's why we met. That's why we have been talking about how to move past those, because we know that these strategies and things work. The state's attorney knows that no matter what, his team is always going to have a seat at the table, and we're going to make sure that we're going to continue to do that. But when you think about some of the things that have been said, right? Victim services is one of the things that we talked about. Our priority for me is making sure those who need services receive them. We're not hiding information about who receive victim services for us, whether that is someone helping to pay for a funeral or helping for transportation, helping relocate somebody, whatever that is. The cases that follow the normal process for the state's attorneys, BPD, and Monsey, and Monsey only steps in and when BPD and or the state's attorney's victim services are unable to. For example, to receive a state's attorney's victim services, an individual must be involved in legal proceedings, which for me should not just be a barrier to access. We know that his office could not go further than that, and they shouldn't, because that's the realm that they're in. These folks used to meet weekly to determine who would take the lead on a given case. Monsey would also send a weekly list of their clients so that everyone was aware. And we those meetings were canceled by the state's attorney's office. But to be honest, Tom, that's neither here nor there, because now we were meeting and figuring out how we can present the ideas and issues from everyone's side and just move
Yeah.
forward.
Well,
That's all that matters to me.
everybody wants you to move forward, that's for sure, because you can imagine, you know, how disconcerting and frustrating it is to folks to hear that, you know, the two people who are really at the center of this great success with reducing violence don't seem to be exactly on the same page. And, you know, we'll leave it to you guys to work it out. But for example, he has a specific complaint when it comes to directing the police department. You mentioned your very prominent role in that regard. He is very interested in elevating and expanding the citation docket, which was an idea that he had when he first took office a couple of years ago. And he's still complaining that the police are not issuing enough citations for these so-called quality of life crimes. Is that something that you can, you know, find a meeting of the minds on?
I think that, Tom, the data says that the police department in Baltimore City wrote more citations than any other jurisdiction in the state of Maryland. But what we will not do, I will never instruct them not to give out citations. But what I will continue to instruct them to do is to use the autonomy that we want our officers to have to make the best decision on what's needed for them, right? Obviously, we're going to continue to have them focus on guns and gun violence and, you know, organizations that are pushing violence and drugs in our communities. But we also every day have them working on quality of life things. That sometimes will end up in a citation. Sometimes it won't. But I just want you to know that they wrote more of these citations than any other law enforcement agency in this state.
Well, you know, and State Attorney Bates would say it's still not enough. But, you know, again, it's and the police commissioner, I think, is of mixed mind about this as well, because he and I have talked about it several times. We're almost out of time, but I do want to ask you about my favorite subject, the Sisson Street dump, which is located at the corner of Sisson and 28th Street. There had been plans to sell it to a private developer and move it somewhere else. The original proposal for where it was going to be moved fell through. People had serious environmental concerns, etc. Is that deal done? I understand that, you know, we've now withdrawn, the city's now withdrawn the offer to sell that property to the developer who was interested in it to do further development in Remington. Where does that stand? Are there no other alternatives? You formed a task force to look into it. Have they come up with anything?
No, they actually just met, I think, earlier this week or Monday. They met Monday night, Tom. So they're meeting, they're working on a final recommendation for the site to give to me, whether that's to keep it, to relocate it, or close it altogether. So I'm just going to be 100% transparent with you. I have not done anything around Sisson Street because I want to wait for the task force to come back to me, which I know they would do, and I appreciate their work.
All right. Well, we will pick it up there the next time we see you, which will be the beginning of next month. Mayor Brandon Scott, the mayor of Baltimore City. Thanks for your time, as always. And again, Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
And up next, Jared DeMarinis, the administrator of the Maryland Board of Elections, will fill us in on a new and improved system for reporting campaign finances and what policy changes at the post office might mean for mail-in voting. Jared DeMarinis joins me on the other side of a quick break. You're listening to Midday, and I am really appreciative of that. Stick around.
You're listening to 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.